My guest at this time is Andrew McCarthy. Andy was one of the lead prosecutors of those who attacked the World Trade Center in 1993. He's affiliated with the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and you can catch a lot of his writings on National Review Online. One of the things he's written recently that's gotten a lot of attention is in response to the controversy up on Capitol Hill and beyond about a handful of House Republicans who have called into question the Obama administration's increased coziness with the Muslim Brotherhood, particularly in Egypt, but elsewhere also, and also how perhaps the administration has become so cozy with the Muslim Brotherhood after the reputation that group has been held in this country over the past several decades. And Andy, thanks so much for being with us.
Greg, my pleasure. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. And obviously, most folks, if they follow the world stage, know that the Muslim Brotherhood is in a position of prominence in Egypt. There's currently a power struggle with the military and so forth, but they're certainly in a good place electorally and politically for themselves. Many people in the United States were very concerned about radical Islam being the strongest influence in Egypt over the last year or so since the uprising in Egypt. The administration seems to be more and more receptive to the idea of the Muslim Brotherhood being in charge. In fact, the president congratulating the winner of the presidential election there not too long ago. So now Michelle Bachmann and a handful of other House Republicans, Louie Gohmert, Trent Franks, and so forth, wanted to know why this is the case and whether certain people, including the wife of former Congressman Anthony Weiner, who's a top aide to Hillary Clinton, are responsible for this. Let's break it down step by step. How big of a shift have we seen in the attitude of this administration?
Of probable cause, it's a number of people say that you can't make that determination confidently because there are so many redacted portions of the package of documents that we've gotten, and it's fair enough to say that we don't know what is behind the redactions, but I do think it's also fair to say we do know what's not behind them, and that is corroboration for the allegations in the dossier. We know that that's not there because there have been hearings, there have been reports. Senators Grassley and Graham, for example, put out a report, a classified memo that was declassified earlier this year, which laid out not only the passages of the actual FISA warrants that were relevant, but also explained that the what the FBI had done was relied on the credibility of Christopher Steele, the person who wrote the memos, without going out and verifying the information that he brought them. That's what the House Intelligence Committee's reports said. That's what Graham and Grassley said, and they said it on the basis of testimony from people like former FBI Director James Comey and former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, who said that without the Steele dossier, there's no way they would have gone to the court for the warrants because they would have lacked probable cause. So I think we can pretty confidently say that happened.
We're talking with Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, a contributing editor and columnist at National Review and a Fox News contributor. And Andy, since you are a former federal prosecutor, you can shed some light on this next issue. On the one hand, you've got folks really on both sides of the aisle, and surprising to some, Marco Rubio from Florida, saying, looks like this was done professionally. It's all on the up and up. And then you've got other folks who are also experts in the field who point out that the FBI, they kind of footnoted it, but didn't make it very obvious about how this dossier was put together and how it was funded. So did the FBI act appropriately in how they presented that information?
Yeah, I think what's happening here, Greg, the sense I get, and of course, you know, we won't know this with certainty unless we get more disclosure. And, you know, one of the things I've been saying for a long time is that President Trump has the power, has the wherewithal, and has had it from the first day that he's been in office to declassify and publicize anything in the way of classified information that the government has. And, you know, until we get this information, there'll be a lot of this sort of speculation that goes on. But it seems to me that there are two different things at play. One is, as an objective matter, completely aside from the law, is Carter Page someone who there was a good faith basis to be suspicious about in terms of his connections with Russia? And then secondly, within the legal framework, is Carter Page somebody who there was a sufficient legal basis to obtain a surveillance warrant against? And I think those two questions are being melded by people like Senator Rubio, Senator Burr. If they want to go out and say that, you know, there was a very good reason for the FBI to be suspicious about Carter Page, I think that's perfectly appropriate. We know that Page, for example, was attempted to be recruited in 2013 by Russian spies. We also know, by the way, that he was not recruited. In fact, they referred to him in recorded conversations as an idiot, and the FBI actually got Page to cooperate with them in the prosecution of the spies. So that really is not a great basis to leap to the conclusion that he somehow became, you know, a master Soviet or Russian double agent. So, you know, if they want to say that between that experience and the fact that that Page had financial interest, business interest in Russia, that he was publicly an apologist for the Putin regime and better American-Russian relations and essentially blaming America for the fact that the relations weren't what they supposedly could otherwise be. Sure, I think that's a lot of grounds to be suspicious. The problem is to get a FISA warrant under federal law, you have to have probable cause that an American citizen in this case is willfully acting as a clandestine agent of a foreign power. That is, he is quite intentionally acting to advance the interests of Russia in the United States in a clandestine way, which means under federal law, in a way that, as the statute says, is a probable violation of federal criminal law. They didn't have that we can see other than through the Steele dossier, which I again think is why McCabe, the former deputy director of the FBI, said that they couldn't have gotten the warrant without the Steele dossier. So, you know, it's fine to say that, yes, we should have been concerned about the Carter Page and even that we should have investigated Carter Page. Getting a FISA warrant on someone is a drastic step up from that.
Well, that is a critical question, and I'm glad you raised it because I haven't heard a lot of people elsewhere saying it, and that really does seem to be the critical component here. So, Andy, as always, crystal clear insight. We appreciate it very much. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Andy McCarthy is a former federal prosecutor. He's a contributing editor and columnist at National Review and a Fox News contributor. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.
Do you suspect that their attitude toward Israel will turn on a dime very publicly, or will they kind of do the double approach that you mentioned a while ago while condoning violence towards Israel, but in all the diplomatic statements saying that that they're anti-terrorism?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, first of all, we need to recognize that no matter what happens in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, they may take over soon. It may take a year or two to basically sort of beat the military down, but eventually I think it's clear which way that's headed. But already, no matter how long that takes to play out, the Sinai has become a border that's a big problem for Israel, and that's a big deal because it hasn't been a problem for 30 years. So I think what will happen is kind of a macro-level strategy of the kind that Hamas has been following for all these years, which is that you know, there'll be continuing terrorism pressure from the outside, and there'll also be continuing political pressure to basically delegitimize Israel as a Jewish state. One of the reasons I've always been so concerned about all of this democracy rhetoric is not only that I don't think the kind of democracy we're talking about is something that's ever going to be adopted in the Middle East, but also it makes it very hard, ultimately, for Israel to continue to maintain itself as a Jewish state.
And finally, sir, what do you make of the reaction that we saw to these five House Republicans who are clearly uncomfortable with the Muslim Brotherhood and uncomfortable with some of the connections they see potentially influencing the Obama administration? What do you make of the administration's response, as well as the response of several Republicans, including John McCain, who you reference in your article, which was quite strong?
Well, you know, look, as I said at the beginning of our conversation, Greg, I think this is not just an Obama administration, the regard for the Muslim Brotherhood. This is a bipartisan, really ruling class in Washington perception of the Muslim Brotherhood. And, you know, some of it has to do with preparing the ground for failure. Some of it has to do with the fact that you have a lot of people in the Republican establishment who have married themselves to this idea of democratizing the Middle East. And it's that idea that has brought these organizations, these Islamist organizations, into power in the first place. And they, too, have an interest in how people see that. I see it as a catastrophe. They want to see it as an evolving democratic process, or at least that's how they want people to see it. And I think, you know, what's happening is the five Republican conservative members of the House who've raised these questions are basically holding up the mirror to the disaster that's happening, you know, before our very eyes.
We'll keep watching. I know you will also. Sir, thank you very much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Take care.
Andy McCarthy, prosecutor of the bombers of the World Trade Center 1993 attack. He is also affiliated with the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and he writes frequently for National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.